Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Sam Anderson from the New York Times and the author of, among other things, Boomtown, which is a great biography of Oklahoma City and the story of many people in that town, including the Oklahoma City Thunder owners, managers, and players, is in our studio. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What are you doing in town?
Oh, you know what I'm doing in town. I'm watching what everyone's watching, which is the White Sox chasing history, chasing the most losses in modern baseball history.
So you're writing this for the New York Times?
For the New York Times, yep. I'm a staff writer for the New York Times Magazine. So I wrote kind of, I've been really watching the team closely and hanging out here in Chicago in September. And
you've been in town. How many games have you seen?
Let's see. I first started watching when they were in Baltimore. I went out to Fenway Park for a few games, and then I came here for the homestand. That was five or six games, and now I'm back to see them.
So you've seen 18 games over the last 3 weeks.
Something like that. I lost count.
That's a commitment by the New York Times.
The Chicago White Sox, yeah, beat.
Well, I mean, seriously, I wonder if that was a tough pitch. Hey, guys, listen, fly me out and put me in a hotel, even if it's a seedy one on Ohio Street.
Yeah. It is.
And because the hotels are booked in town, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all booked up. There's some kind of concert, and I don't even know what's going on, but I couldn't find anything. I flew out to cover this history-making game last night, and then it was one of the most confusing, exciting, hopeless, hopeful, tangled-up games I've ever seen in any sport ever.
Why do you say that?
Well, they had it all lost. The crowd was rooting against the White Sox because they wanted this record,
I know
which
this.
Kind of astonished me. And they were rooting hard. And it was like, I've never heard a sports crowd like this before. They were just on edge and loud. And every pitch, ball, strike, as we got into the later innings, the Sox fell behind one run, then two runs, which is like climbing Mount Everest for their offense. They were just going to lose. And we were all ready to write that story about history. And then they didn't somehow.
It was the most cynical crowd I have ever been to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the cynicism. You know, when that pop-up fell in front of home plate,
yeah,
and the crowd was jubilant.
That was like that felt like a ancient Roman Colosseum moment. People got
thumbs down,
vicious. Thumbs went down, and that the booing started, the chance of sell the team, the chance of 121, and but the incredible thing that I've experienced before here in Chicago watching the White Sox is, once the team turned it around, started making this rally, were given the gift of this incredible error on a pop-up, and went into the lead, the crowd became White Sox fans again. That's what I heard from up.
Yeah.
And there was a time when it was like, it's almost like, you know, there's those estuaries where the ocean flows into a river and it's like salt water and fresh water mixed. It was like that. There were very complicated cross currents of like booing and cheering. And then the river won. It became just all White Sox fervor, and people wanted this win, and they got it, and they were jubilant, and it was very confusing and exciting.
That's what you get with a writer like
this.
Yeah, it was
good.
It was like an estuary.
That was well explained.
Wow. Yeah, do people know about estuaries?
No, they do now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was weird too, because the pop-up that fell in front of the plate, the White Sox were in the field. You mentioned the pop-up that was misplayed by the Angels' second baseman, which basically led to the rally.
Right. Yeah.
The White Sox, going into that game, after seven innings, were 0-94 this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, go figure that this is the one time that they come back and win.
It's been a season of unusual numbers and statistics. I guess never before in the history of the game has a team gone an entire 162-game season without having won a game coming from behind. And
yeah,
the White Sox were seven games away from that last night when, lo and behold, a bizarre play by their team.
Right.
We really walked in through the back door on that win last night.
It really seemed like a contest against two of the worst baseball teams you could put together.
So what are you telling the world about the White Sox?
I mean, I was drawn to this story because I love baseball, but because of something larger, which is just, it kind of touched me, this idea of being the biggest loser in baseball history and just the magnitude of that number of 120 losses. It's so many losses for guys who are, you know, we can laugh at them for making silly plays, but guys who are great athletes and great ball players. And how does that feel? And what does it look like on a human level in the clubhouse? And how does it feel to watch these games with the fans? So that's what I was drawn to. So I guess I'm just trying to tell readers what it all feels like.
Without getting too pop psychologist about it, I think there is a kind of groupthink mentality that losing begets losing, and that there could be books written about, you know, for the business world, about lessons to sort of learn from the White Sox futility this year. Am I making too much out of that?
Probably not. I mean, they shouldn't have been this bad. No, as many of the
That's my point.
Yeah, many of the baseball writers have told me no team, no modern baseball team should or really could be this bad. Something else is going on, and you see the bad bounces, and you see the kind of, yeah, the kind of demoralization of some of these losses. No, I think there's something there for sure.
I mean, this team was constructed to be bad, but not this bad, because this is yet another...
What do you mean they were constructed to be?
It's another rebuild. Look what they did at the trade deadline. They got rid of all their commodities.
2 years ago, this was a team that we thought was going to be in the playoffs.
2021, they were in the playoffs. 2022, it started to spiral a little bit downward.
We were getting these stud pitchers, guys that throw 99 miles an hour.
And don't be surprised if they get rid of Garrett Crochet in the offseason, too. I mean, this is, I don't know. The problem I think a lot of fans are having is they don't understand what direction this team is actually going. Because they've broken it down three times now since basically 2018.
Right.
And what do you expect?
I've written a lot about the NBA, and so my first thought when I heard about how off the rails this season had gone was, oh, they're tanking, they'll get the number one pick, they'll get a superstar. And it blew my mind to find out
guess what,
that they're locked out of the top 10 because of these new baseball rules.
And that
rules.
One player doesn't transition a team like a quarterback would for a football
team.
Right,
or a point guard in the NBA.
Sure.
Yeah. And in fact, you really have followed the NBA. Your book, Boomtown, follows the Oklahoma City Thunder, the bizarre existence of that city, and then all of the personalities that have come through there. But just based on your experience, does a fan base dislike the owner of a team as much as the White Sox fans dislike Jerry Reinsdorf?
I've never seen it before. I've never seen it. I mean, that's what you hear about. I heard speeches about Reinsdorf from fans. I heard speeches from a hat vendor at the stadium. It's just like I one of the lines that got cut from my piece was, I felt as I walked around the stadium like I was listening to a 12-episode true crime podcast where the culprit in the end was Jerry Reinsdorf.
That's nice. They cut that?
Yeah, they cut a lot.
They put in the estuary stuff? They cut that?
They didn't even put in the estuary. I basically wrote whole novellas about Beef Loaf and all these fans in Section 108.
Yeah, Beef Loaf is the guy in 108 who there, that's sort of the super fans. Yeah. Talk a little bit about Section 108.
Section 108 seems great. It's a bit of a media phenomenon. They told me I was the third writer in 2 days to sit out there, and I think a lot of the beat writers have written pieces about Section 108 because, you know, at a time when the Sox weren't exactly lighting up the national scene, these guys in 108 became this very tight-knit group of season ticket holders, held a lot of events. They all seemed to run their own blog or host their own podcast. Very charismatic, very knowledgeable group of guys and women. And so it was just hilarious to sit with these people and get these speeches in my ear about, you know, the crimes of Jerry Reinsdorf, get really deep in the weeds about missed draft picks and bad trades. And then also, whenever anything happened good for the White Sox, they would just erupt like little children. They were just giddy. They love this team so deeply. It was really sweet to see.
You know, the thing that Jerry Reinsdorf has going against him is not just the White Sox, but there are a lot of Bulls fans in town too.
They're
upset that he's done what he's done to the Bulls as well.
You wrote in your piece the other day, over the course of the 2024 season, the White Sox have explored the full spectrum of losing, the way a great actor uses every corner of the stage, the way a jazz saxophonist probes every note in a scale. They've lost nobly, tragically, cleverly, inspiringly, deflatingly. They've lost late at night and early in the afternoon, in soggy rain and on crisp, sunny days. I've seen perfectly professional losses that could have gone either way, but of course didn't, and games that should have been stopped for cruelty in the fourth inning. The dropped pop-up in the outfield, yeah, and the dropped pop-up in front of home plate last night were, I think, the most emblematic of this season. Just things that should not happen.
Those are the plays that will survive. And then the other one I think really will is that majestic catch of what should have been a game-winning home run by Andrew Vaughn against the Texas Rangers, where the left fielder just went up over the wall as far as you can go over a wall, right in front of that big hot dog ad,
yep,
which somehow made it worse, and just ripped the hearts out of the fans.
Yeah, you did talk about in your piece what was the worst loss, and then you write it depends on your definition of worst. I listened to a game and saw a little of it, radio and TV, where in the second inning, they were out of it, you know, like down 9 runs. And it was the game where the first 4 opposing batters in the second inning, I think it was, walked. Mm. And then there was like an error and then a single and then a walk. You know, it was just bad baseball. And I don't know if you have a comment on that, but we've talked about the plays, but I wonder if there's games that are going to be legend this year.
Yeah, I think the ones we've mentioned, and then I think like last night was stacking up just to be the archetypal White Sox loss, which was they played them even for a long time, then went down 1-0, and it just felt like that's it. Their offense is so unthreatening. Their offense is just like, it's like whatever the opposite of threatening, it's like nurturing to the other team, and you just knew they would lose, and somebody said in the crowd, them losing 1-0 would just be the perfect way to break the record.
Yeah, no, what a funny concept. What's the perfect way to break the record of losing the most games? So you're going to stay in a seedy hotel tonight.
Yep.
It'll be fine. You'll be fine. You're on Ohio Street.
Okay, thanks.
And then, doesn't sound very convincing, does it? You go to the game tonight, and you're going to stay in town as long as this story lingers, huh?
Yeah, I bought a one-way plane ticket. I booked, one night of hotel, and I was ready to leave immediately. I had my game story half written, and they got me. I'm saying again, and I would not be shocked, honestly, if they win out the season and I'm in Detroit watching them waiting for that loss 121.
And you know, that's going to be an interesting series because the Tigers need wins to stay in the playoff race.
Sam, well done. It's a pleasure to read you. It's so nice to meet you. Thanks for coming into the studio. And if you're in town the next few days for whatever reason, swing by again. It's nice to make your company.
Yeah, my wife told me I need to get an apartment here now.
It's 10:56, and Sam Anderson, the author of Boomtown, among other things.